Cloudy Thoughts by Tommy Patterson. I often wonder if virtual machines in the cloud are heavier than those built on-premise. I mean, the air is much lighter in the atmosphere, right? Solar power directly from the sun means a lot less cabling as well. Then I learned that Microsoft Azure is built on the ground, but it's just called the cloud. So I guess there really is no reason to ask the question. Still, I guess it's better than being built on a foundation of new and used books.
Chris, somebody hijacked the tape again. Can you roll this week's episode of TechNet Radio?
Okay, folks, welcome to today's webinar, Microsoft Cloud, Learn It Now, Boost Your Career. What we're going to talk through today is some content that we've been going through in our camps around the probably been doing this about 5 or 6 months and refining the message. It's a step-by-step that talks through all of the pieces of how you would implement a virtual network, Active Directory, virtual machine, and at the end we've got a bonus where we're talking through how to get the command line tools for Azure working, and then also how to upload your own image. We're actually going to shortcut that a little bit by downloading an image of 2012 server from TechNet, from the TechNet webpage, and also manipulating it a little bit, and then actually going and uploading it with the command line tools. So hope you enjoy it. We'll go ahead and get started. I'm Tommy Patterson. I'm a senior technical evangelist for Microsoft out of the Southeast. And today, I've had about 17 years of experience as an IT professional. I started out on desk side support, network engineering, moved up through IT management and consulting. The last 7-8 years, my focus was mainly around VMware. I really enjoyed the virtualization craze that started, and attended some of the first VMworlds and really loved what I saw. A few years ago, I was approached by some of my customers, and they asked me to look at the new Hyper-V. And I said, well, you know, for me at the time, I just couldn't see how anybody could catch up to VMware. And I started looking into what Hyper-V could do, and I was blown away. And from the biggest piece to me was the SMB3 protocol and what we were able to do refining that file system so that we can actually use the file system that we've all grown up knowing and loving, which is NTFS, and using the sharing mechanism that's so easy to do versus a complicated SAN strategy, which is what I spent most of my time troubleshooting or planning out for customers as a consultant. So as I got into it a little deeper, I thought, wow, this technology is really hot. I want to be a part of it. I applied and got the position at Microsoft a little over a year ago, and has been one of the best decisions of my life, really enjoying it. So I guess you're kind of wondering, why am I talking about VMware and Hyper-V? And well, it's kind of the platform, right? I mean, we have to build the platform first, and Hyper-V is the platform for Windows Azure. So I just wanted to put that out there. A couple of good links here. This is my blog at the top, virtuallycloud9.com. You can join or follow me on Twitter at Tommy_Patterson. And then I've got the three links, LinkedIn, my office hours, and my meetup that you can join if you're not already joined to those. You can email me as well, Tommy.Patterson@Microsoft.com. And as a bonus download link at the bottom, if you'd like to download Server 2012 R2 and get started, I've got some lab guides on my blog on how to get started. Today we'll focus on Azure mainly. All right, there's a series here. So this is the first of five. All right, we're going to have four more that follow this one every Wednesday. Dan Stultz, Blaine Barton, Young Chow, and Bob Hunt will be joining me. We are the East Coast Evangelists. So there's also a list of meetups on the right-hand side. If you haven't joined a meetup, it's a good place to go to stay attuned into what's going on, where the events are going to be around you, what webcasts are coming up, and that kind of thing, but also the live in-person events. We've got several pro camps that are kicking up right now that are really geared towards those VMware admins that want to understand Microsoft technology a little better. What is Hyper-V going to do for them? How does it work? A lot of it's just a lot of lingo changes. You know, what do I call a data store. Well, Microsoft, we don't really have data stores. We don't need them. We've got volumes. So we talk through, you know, an NTFS volume or a file share, or we talk through you know, how to connect to a SAN, but we don't have to format it with a special proprietary protocol or format. And so we have to talk through those things and help educate everyone, because we know that most of the data centers around the world are actually going to a hybrid model where everything is not strictly one particular vendor that's running as their hypervisor. So if you join up on any of these meetups, you'll see where those events are being posted. And we've actually got that round of registration starting right now. So if you can jump out there and grab onto that after this call, that'd be great. aka.ms/cloudcast will also take you directly to a link that shows all the cloudcasts that are coming up, so you can grab that as well. This deck will be available after this call, so if you need to catch up on anything, or if you missed anything and would like to see some of it again, it will be available, and I will actually post that link at the end of the call today, so you'll be able to have it. Now, this is kind of a follow-along. You won't be able to follow everything real-time, because you know, installing Active Directory does take a little bit of time, so we'll kind of jump through that, kind of like a cooking show, where we've already kind of pre-baked some of it in the screen. But you should be able to follow along, especially from the cloud deck that I provide afterwards. So this kind of keeps in mind if you've got a trial that you can use or your MSDN account. It'll also pay as you go. So if you're a pay as you go subscriber, you can definitely take advantage of this, learn how to go through everything. Just keep in mind, folks, if you're not using your virtual machines and you go ahead and shut them down, you won't be charged. And if you're really worried about your hours running out in your trial, remember that a shutdown virtual machine will keep you safe from hitting those hours. The link that, if you haven't signed up or you've already had your subscriptions are expiring, then you can hit that link in the middle to go get started. So with a pay-as-you-go subscription. Today's session, we're going to deploy one Active Directory virtual machine in the Windows Azure Cloud, and then we're going to upload a Server 2012 image to the cloud storage, which you could later use for deployment. If you have any kind of troubles following the lab, I hold office hours every Monday from 4 to 5 o'clock. That's Eastern Standard Time. Anyone's welcome to join up to that and subscribe to one of those sessions. They're 20-minute sessions that you can subscribe to. And if we need to go a little further, we can actually schedule something on the side later. Today, we've got Microsoft IT pros standing by in the Q&A panel to answer any of your questions. So if you have any questions, please post them to the chat. And Dan Stoltz, Young Chow, will be there to answer any questions you may have. Also see Bob Familiar online today and Susan Wizawati. Thanks for joining, folks. So let's talk about cloud computing just as a high level. We're not going to spend too much time on architecture or slideware, but more on the hands-on lab side. But I want to talk a little bit about what we're doing. Okay, so there's three different models of cloud computing that we need to talk about first. There's infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, software as a service. I like to use a couple of analogies for these. Software as a service, that's something that we've been doing quite a long time. It's caught hold in some places haven't subscribed. I would say Office 365, or some of you may use Salesforce.com or CRM online. Those are different forms of software as a service. Platform as a service kind of gets into, well, I have my own runtimes or my own applications that I want to run, but I just want to plug them into an architecture, put my database there, and run away. Let it run, let it burst, or scale down, scale up. There's a lot of good analogies out there. One of the ones we like to talk about is Papa John's and what they did during the Super Bowl, allowing people to order pizzas online. It was a big deal at the time. For them to implement a service that would allow people to do that in-house would have probably put their network guys out of business internally, right? I mean, millions of people watch the Super Bowl, one of the most widely watched things in the world. And for all of those people to go would probably be prohibitive, right, for an in-house infrastructure. So I like to talk about that analogy because what they did is they put their application into Windows Azure and their database, and then they let that scale up and scale down throughout the Super Bowl to take orders. They paid for what they use. And that's kind of the model that we talk about when it comes to pricing, right? Pay for what you use. Infrastructure as a service is a new offering. We just started this, came out of beta last early, I'd say early summer, late spring. And what it says is, let Microsoft manage that compute layer. So we're going to have the server, the network, and the storage side taken care of from a physical standpoint, but we're going to then say, here are your services, and let you provision and manage your virtual machines, put your own operating system, whatever operating system you'd like that's on the supported list, and then your runtime, your applications, and your data, you populate those things. Okay, so that's what that particular model is, what our focus is today. But the goal or the idea behind most IT shops is to progress towards a platform as a service so that you're not manipulating or having to administer so many different components in the infrastructure, right? We already have too many hardware components that we have to deal with today, right? And we have too many silos that we've built over the years. Now we want to break that down and start building IT back into the thing it was supposed to be when we started. IT was put in place to help businesses enable businesses and their end users or their customers to actually partake in services or purchase things easier and faster and make those widgets that much better. And we kind of got away from that, right? I mean, for 10 years, IT was this extra cost center where we tried to make things better for the company, but we actually were just making it a little smoother. We were there to kind of help answer questions and do some troubleshooting and that kind of thing. We're really at the point now in the cycle where we should be getting back to helping the business get better and better and better, faster and faster and faster. And that's where we are today. So I want to talk through that. Again, we won't go through too much on platform as a service or software as a service in depth, but those are offerings that Windows Azure has as well. Well, let's talk about the footprint. Windows Azure is several data centers, and at this point, we have data centers in America, some in Europe, and some in Southeast Asia and East Asia. Now, it's important to note that if you're running things in high availability or if you're wanting to make sure that your workloads are safe in the event of a disaster, you can set up these workloads to replicate from one to another. For instance, we would say that if we implemented something on the East Coast in the U.S., it would be replicated to the West Coast. And basically all you're doing is setting up geo-replication and high availability on that virtual machine or set of virtual machines. And that's how we kind of worked it out. Now, coming soon, we're going to be expanding into Australia, mainland China, and growing out the platform. The green dots that you see are a content distribution network. So let's say you put out some stuff that you want widely available to people all around the globe, and you want it to be really fast for those folks that are close to it geographically. Well, the CDN network is there to do that, so you can actually subscribe and use that to grow your footprint and be as fast as possible for those people accessing those resources. All right. Now, when I say 89 countries and territories, these are all the countries and territories that can legally subscribe to Windows Azure services. All right. And when I say subscribe, we're talking about joining up to any of these data centers that run Windows Azure. These data centers hold between 30,000 and 100,000 physical hosts. The internal network connectivity is ranging from 30 terabytes to 120 terabytes of aggregate network bandwidth. Each storage account can grow up to 100 terabytes of storage per account, and you can have up to 20 accounts per an Azure subscription. So if you can think about the computing power that represents from a network and a storage, not even talking about CPU and memory at this point, but we're talking about massive amounts of aggregate storage and network bandwidth available to 89 countries and territories. That is a huge footprint to cover. And I think Microsoft's done a great job with that. So let's go ahead and go to the next piece of it, and that's where we're going to get started. If you haven't jumped into an Azure portal before, this is what you would see when you first join into Windows Azure. It's a good look at the portal. Left-hand menu has all the different options that you can use, you can subscribe to. So websites, I actually run virtuallycloud9.com on Azure in the websites area. It's a WordPress site. It runs on Linux, and it uses a MySQL database. Who would have thought, right? Microsoft has really opened up the arms and said, we know we need to embrace more than just Microsoft technologies, and we've done a really good job of that. So if you're a big Linux fan, Jump right in. Websites are there, mobile services, cloud services, SQL databases where we kind of started, so you can run your SQL databases across a farm of SQL in Azure. There's also virtual machines that can run Microsoft SQL. We can talk through that, but maybe not today. We won't go into that too deep. Some of our Azure Pro Camps, if you go and come join those, you can learn a little more about that. But those virtual machines, just to give you an idea, virtual machines come from a catalog. So you could say, I want to run a SQL database or a Microsoft SQL server, and you can deploy your own. But you could also say, I want to upload a database and start running it in SQL Azure. Those are two different things. So we won't go into that too deep. Today we're going to focus mainly on virtual machines, networks, and storage accounts. And that's kind of the basic building blocks that you would need to get started. certainly networks being the first place that we need to talk through. Now, this is probably what gets people hung up the most. In all of my pro camps that I've done, the networking section seems to be the area of where people want to understand more, or they're having trouble trying to get their hands around it. Think of it this way. It is a virtual network. For those VMware admins out there or Hyper-V admins, it is a virtual network in the sense that you're creating a virtual switch with ports you would connect to. However, you don't really touch that piece of it. So you really are just creating a subnet that you're going to be attaching your servers to that you build, your virtual machines. That subnet could also be a VPN termination point so that you can actually get traffic from your on-premise network to Azure securely and privately. Well, the first thing that we have to do when building one of these virtual networks is provide a DNS server pointer. All you're really doing in this step is registering a DNS server that will exist or does exist now, and all it is a pointer with an IP address. A lot of people think, well, am I deploying a DNS server at this point? No, not really. All you're really doing, if you can think of a DHCP scope, if you can think of a DHCP scope that you would deploy, you're basically building it out with, where's my gateway? Where's my DNS server? Those type of things are what you would put into a handout in that DHCP scope. And that's kind of what we're doing here. Because every machine that you launch and every virtual machine that you create actually grabs an IP address from the pool of that virtual network that you've created. And every one of those virtual machines needs to be able to see DNS. So if you want DNS resolved, say, on-premise, or if you want DNS to resolve in a virtual machine in Windows Azure, you need to make sure that that DNS server is registered so that when those machines come up, they know where to point to. In other words, if you go into a virtual machine and you go into the network connections area, you know, local area connection, right-click properties, and you go into TCP/IP and look at it, well, you can't really edit things in that area. Okay, it's all locked down by the Azure side of the house. So that piece is locked down. All we're saying is make sure you've set up that virtual network properly with the right subnet, and then what DNS server you need to point to when those machines come online. Okay, so first step. Down at the bottom, you'll have a new button. You click on New Networks, Virtual Network, and you'll see Registered DNS Server. I gave it a name here. That name is really irrelevant. I don't think there's any use for it other than a placeholder. The main thing that you have to be sure about is that server IP address. And so I like to go ahead and say 10.0.0.4 in this exercise because that's the first IP address that's going to be available in the network range that I create. All right, this is what trips up people the most. Just make sure you understand that DNS server 10.0.0.4 right now really doesn't exist, not virtually or physically, anywhere in the world. We're going to create it in a little while. And then also you need to tell what subscription you're going to be putting that DNS pointer into. I use my pay-as-you-go account for this particular exercise. All right, once you've done that, go ahead and go next. And we're going to go to the virtual networks area again. We're still there. Create a virtual network. So we're going to click on the right arrow there. And we're going to say create network. We're going to give this a name. Again, this name really means nothing. It's just a placeholder for you to understand what you've implemented. Now, what is important is the region. So we need to choose which region we're going to be a part of. And the regions are East U.S., West U.S., you know, there's different regions, Southeast Asia, East Asia, that you might can choose from. This is critical because when you create this virtual network, that is where it exists. All right. You can also create a new affinity group right here from the same screen. And affinity groups say anything that we run, let's say that we're running five virtual machines and they're all going to be on the East Coast. Well, we want every one of those machines to run as close to one another as possible, right? But we don't want them to be on the same hardware. So if you can think about the data centers that Microsoft has, it might be in a particular rack, but the virtual machines would not reside in the same rack of servers. That way, if we lose one piece of our physical footprint, we're not losing your virtual machines in the affinity group. Well, that comes into play. So if you create an affinity group now, and make sure, you know, it's already in the East, well, we're going to use East U.S. for today, make sure your subscription is the same as the DNS server you just selected, so pay as you go for me. Then you can say, okay, we're going to group everything together. It's all going to be in the same geographic location, and we're going to make sure it's pretty resilient to any kind of hardware failures. We go next. And this is where we decide on the subnet. So that subnet mask or that count, this is critical, especially for this particular guide. If you're doing, your starting IP is 10.0.0.0, well, Windows Azure automatically holds 10.0.0.1, 2, and 3 as its own. So you can't access those first three IP addresses with any of your machines. All right, you won't actually use those for anything. That's why we chose 10.0.0.4 as our DNS pointer. Notice I chose 4096 as the count. We probably won't need that many, but in this particular exercise, because we're only going to build a few servers. But if you were to go out and create a bigger subnet or actually expand out to many servers running, I think this would work out really well. Okay. Now, this is where you select that DNS server that you started with. Okay. You can also connect to a local network or what has been changed or termed as site-to-site or point-to-site VPN. Okay, so some of these screens may change from time to time. This is where if you wanted to create that virtual network from your on-premise all the way up into the Azure cloud, you could actually do that here. You can actually go back and do it later as well if you want to just get started. But we're not going to do that today. We're just going to build a virtual network in the cloud. So I'm going to choose that DNS server and go next. And then if you'll notice, the bottom pane will expand and show you the two operations that I've already started and whether they've completed or not. You can dismiss the completed options, and you can also minimize that operations summary screen so that it's not taking up any more of the portal. And that is there all the time. You want to go back and look at a history of what you've done. This is where you would see that. Also, if you have any errors, maybe you're trying to delete a virtual disk, but it's attached to a virtual machine that's running, well, then you would see an error there. Okay. Now, the second big thing we need to make sure we do is set up the storage account. Storage account being where we're going to hold all of our virtual hard drives. All right. It's important that we do this ahead of time. Otherwise, the wizard will create one for you and have a randomized name. It's kind of messy if you're going back and trying to figure out where things sit. So you click on storage, click on new, click on the storage, quick create. And this is probably one of the only areas that I use quick create. Everything else you'll see me do today has to do with has to do with using the custom gallery, right? So we hit quick create, we go in and we type in a URL. Now this URL is actually live. This will be something that you can hit with API calls from anywhere. In that particular URL I put in is Tommy's Lab Store 001. You know, recommend you do something like that. And you'll see that URL is populated. Notice that I have to then choose a location or an affinity group. Make sure you choose the affinity group that was created in the previous steps. That makes sure that all of our network, all of our storage, and all of our virtual machines that we create later are all going to reside in the same area and use the same infrastructure. All right. Also notice at the bottom, enable geo-replication. Well, while we don't do that in this lab, if you want this particular storage account to make sure that all data is replicated across the country, then you can do so. Data is written to disk locally three times, so three different spindles, as you're writing data. And so if you lose a spindle, no big deal, you wouldn't even know it. You could lose two spindles, you wouldn't even know it. All right. When you replicate, when you do georeplication, it's actually replicating across the country and being written three more additional times. So that's six times that your data sits on disk. Fairly resilient. Don't see a data loss occurring in the near future for anything you put into Windows Azure. All right. Now we need to build our first virtual machine. First virtual machine page. We're there. We see that there's nothing that's been created before. Notice at the top you've got virtual machine instances, images, and disks. Virtual machine instances will create, but let's say that we had some images that we had uploaded to deploy from. We'll get there in a little while, but that's where we would go if we wanted to see what images are available that we have, and we can actually see those there. For now, what we're going to do is click on Create a virtual machine. And this is where we were talking about. This is where I don't use Quick Create any longer. Okay, Quick Create, if you notice on the right-hand side, you don't get as much choice there. I can't choose the affinity group that I set up. This is more for people who are trying to create virtual machines really fast just to play around with some features or do really quickly, but not something I would set up as something permanent, especially if I want to tie that back into my back-end infrastructure. So I click on From Gallery, and that's going to take me to see what all is available to me. All right, Server 2012 Data Center. We recently had Server 2012 R2 preview added. 2008 R2 SP1 is there. Notice that you don't see any client OSs. All right. Right now, there's no legal way to run a client OS in Windows Azure. These are all server type OSs. So we've got SQL Server 2012 SP1. We've got BizTalk Server, SharePoint's out there. All of these. Most of these, Windows Server, SQL Server, come with full licensing when you deploy them. SharePoint Server, on the other hand, is only a trial. So if you're going to deploy SharePoint in production in a Windows Azure virtual machine, you'll actually be bringing across your own bits and installing, and also your own licenses to apply. I just wanted to highlight that. Notice there are plenty of different Linux images as well, OpenSUSE, two and some others, CentOS, are listed here as well that you can select. For today, we're going to do Server 2012 Data Center. Right. So when you first get into this screen, the first thing you're going to see is that there's a version release date. That version release date is important. What it says is this is Server 2012 with all of the different updates and roll-ups up until the point of the date it shows. So that release date. So this one says March 26, 2013. I left that there. That's an old slide. The new, when you walk into the portal today, or when you try to create a virtual machine, you're going to see later or more recent dates, right? Well, this is key. Maybe you started a development project and you want to run everyone on the same release. Well, back it up and go to one of the earlier release dates and make sure everybody's running on the same release during your dev cycle. Then maybe deploy a new release of Server 2012 with all the updates, so you're not going through that whole Windows update section of your project, and then apply all the code and the data and see how things run. That's there for kind of a way of keeping everything streamlined as you walk through your projects if you're doing a dev test type cycle, or your production environment is not rolled up to the latest release date. Virtual machine name, this is key. I like to go ahead and choose something, especially if you're following along in the lab area for this today. Try to choose a five-digit code in the front of lab AD01. Some people use their initials with a couple numbers and try to make that unique. The reason I do that is it won't flag it if it's a problem, like if somebody else has used that name. It won't flag that. But it will on the next screen when we create the DNS entry, which would actually be available via the web if you were to use it. So go ahead and put a name in there. The username, you need to add a username that's unique. I would use something like Tommy Admin or something that I can remember easily. And then the new password and confirm it. This is key. You can't call me and ask me to go in and reset your password. right? I'm not here. I can't do that. I can't even see anything in your subscription. So if you use a password here, make sure you write it down somewhere. Keep it handy that you have it in the event that you forget it. Now, the size. Different size virtual machines. Small, one core, 1.75 gig of memory, and that can range all the way up to a massive machine with, say, four cores and 16 gig of RAM or what have you. For today, we're only using a small one core machine for this Active Directory host. So we'll go ahead and select that and hit next. Okay, cloud service. Let's talk about that for a second. Now let's say we build three Active Directory hosts. They're all running DNS, and we want that DNS to service multiple machines, and we are worried about maybe losing one of our virtual machines, Active Directory servers. So we want to create what's called a cloud service. Dump all three of those Active Directory machines into that cloud service. Well, it automatically populates with the name I gave the first machine, but I like to back that off. So Tommy Test AD is what I used here. I back off the numbers because it's going to represent multiple machines. I then should then choose my subscription. In this particular case, I have different subscriptions to choose from. I would choose the pay-as-you-go account to be the same as my others. Region Affinity Group and Virtual Network, that's where you can choose, make sure you choose that virtual network you created. Don't choose Affinity Group, don't choose the region, choose the virtual network, because this Active Directory server, again, is going to have 10.0.0.4 as its first IP address and only IP address. So when that IP address gets assigned, it'll be a sticky DHCP address that stays with it from that point forward. All right? Now, look at the storage account, make sure it's right. And then if you're going to use an availability set, which would have the VM actually available in, say, the West Coast and East Coast, in the event of a failure, then you could turn on availability sets. We don't actually do that today in this lab, but it's there if you want to use it. Now, there are two ports that are open by default that are called endpoints, and this is how you can access these virtual machines at first. Right, so remote desktop is actually an auto-generated port. We don't actually use 3389 as the default port for security reasons. So it'll be a randomized high-numbered port. Right? Say 52,898. That will just be the random number that's been thrown in there. So when you launch the RDP session, you actually would get a IP address that you're connecting to or a server name you're connecting to colon that public port number. PowerShell, on the other hand, is defaulted to the normal port, as we use certificates to make sure it's secure. So that's there for your protection. These two different pieces can be turned off. So if you finish working in your machine, you get everything the way you want it, maybe you've created that VPN tunnel in between that virtual network and your on-premise network, now I can turn off these endpoints, and nobody can get to them except for me on that on-premise network, right? So that's one way of doing things. I do highly recommend, when you're finished working in a virtual machine and you don't have anything that you're offering out to the general public, go ahead and turn these endpoints off. You can always turn them back on from the portal at any point in time. Okay, so when we get next, we're going to actually see a summary screen as that machine's being built. This takes a little bit of time. If you're following along right now, this is where we're going to kind of break away from each other. You can actually catch up later and by following this PowerPoint screen later from my blog. But basically, we're going to take note the machine did get 10.0.0.4. If you see it's any other internal IP address, this is where you should stop and start back over. You missed a step somewhere in the network and DNS section, or possibly when you create the virtual machine, you may not have chose the right area to create it. But to make sure it says 10.0.0.4, that's real important. The size is small, one core, that's exactly what I chose, and it comes with one disk. Okay, this is important. The first disk that comes with the particular virtual machine that you've built is a read-write cache disk. So what we're going to do is we're actually going to attach a new empty disk, and that's going to be where we hold our data for Active Directory. All right, this is important. A lot of people think of, why would I want to do that when I'm pretty sure I'm not going to lose data? Well, let's say you do have a hardware crash, and you've already got caching enabled on that OS disk. It's really not a good idea to put any kind of database type activity on that disk. So add a new empty disk. It doesn't cost anything. You only use what you only pay for what you use, and it starts off as thinly provisioned. So add the empty disk. And we're going to go through those steps now. Notice there's a file name. I would give this file name something that you can relate to that particular virtual machine. So what's the file server? What's the server's name? And then maybe data 01, or I've even labeled mine as dash F drive, because every virtual machine that you create in Azure, the first available drive letter is the F drive. So I go ahead and just say server name dash F drive. Say the size is 10 gig, and then the host cache preference is set to none. That's by default for any disk that you add to a virtual machine. Right? Disks can be up to 1 terabyte that you add, and you can add multiple disks to a virtual machine. And then if you need to expand past, say 1 terabyte per volume, you can use storage spaces in Server 2012 and pull all those different disks together and make one big giant volume to write to. Don't need that today, since we only need a few gig to get the Active Directory going. It's there. Okay, so I've got the machine up and running. Notice I may have created a couple other machines. They show up in the portal as well, but I'm only really concerned about that Active Directory server. Once it says it's running, okay, not running provisioning or not starting, but running, it's available for me to connect to via RDP. Notice that I've highlighted at the bottom there's a connect button, so you click on connect, and it will take you out to a download, which is the RDP shortcut. Basically, it's a pre-programmed RDP session that you can launch via terminal server. If you're running on a different type of client, say it's a Mac OS or a Linux box, and you want to use some other type of RDP launcher, you can actually go grab the port number and the server name and actually just go hit it directly with that RDP client. That's in the endpoint screen again. But if you're on a Windows client, you can just launch this now by clicking open and go through the normal setup. Yeah, don't ask me for connections to this computer. I trust it. Go ahead and click connect. Put in that username and password that you created during the first steps for that VM. And then go through the connect options. Make sure the name works. Don't ask me again to view the certificate. And you're good to go. You should launch in, and right after you're inside the particular session, you'll then see the management, the server manager launch. Once you're inside server manager, click on tools and go to computer management. This is the old screen that we all know and love, going way back to the early days of server, where I can go into disk management and say, I want to add that new disk. It should automatically see it. Sometimes people will see a pop-up asking for formatting of that particular disk, but in this case, we're not really too concerned about that. Just hit cancel. We want to make sure we initialize the disk properly, right? So what we want to do is say okay, make sure it's MBR boot record, and then new simple volume. All right, so right click where it says 10 gig unallocated and do new simple volume, and then click on the next. We're going to use all of it, so just leave that number there and hit next. Assign the following drive letter. I choose F. It's the first one available. Hit next. Give the volume label a name. Say data. Hit next, and then hit finish. Let it go through. Okay. Once we have our drive letter, we're ready to start installing Active Directory. Okay. This piece does take a little bit of time, so if you're if you've got time to do it later today, maybe you can jump in and follow along and do this. But click on Manage and Add Role and Features, and that's going to take you to the Add Roles and Features wizard. This is where you install any of the different roles or features that are available in Server 2012 out of the box. This has been revamped, heavily revamped, from the earlier releases of Server. So if you haven't seen Server Manager yet, go take a look at it. You can actually do roles and feature installation against a remote server. So very cool there. The role-based or feature-based installation, click Next. Go installing Active Directory. You want to use Active Directory Domain Services. Go ahead and check that box. Hit Next. It's going to prompt you, though, to add these particular features that are required. So go ahead and click Add Features there when it asks you to, and hit Next. That's going to take you to the next screen. We don't need any other features at this point in time, so hit Next. And then it's going to go through the initial phase of Active Directory Domain Services, just saying a few different things you might need to know about this implementation, the DNS server, that kind of thing. But just go ahead and hit next. All right. There's going to be an option to restart the server automatically. You can click yes and then hit install. It's actually not going to require a reboot when you install the role. It won't happen until we actually promote this to a domain server. So if you look over and you see that the add roles and features wizard is going through, and you can actually close that if you'd like. The biggest thing to note is that anytime you have an active role installation occurring, the flag at the top right corner of the server manager window will illuminate with a exclamation point or a warning or per se that says, hey, here's the next step. Right. So after the feature installation or the role installation has occurred, you'll see it says it's completed, and you see the link here that says promote the server to a domain controller. This is the only way to do so, because there is no such thing as DC promo anymore, unless you use some of the deprecated version that comes in PowerShell. So this is how we recommend promoting servers to domain controllers. I've got a blog post on my site if you want to do this from a Server 2012 instance that you've installed without a GUI. You are able to do that and use the server manager remotely to install and get that domain controller configured. But this is how I recommend getting all of those domain controllers going. Either that or use the PowerShell tools. So now we've got the Active Directory wizard. This is pretty much the same as you've seen in previous versions of the Active Directory wizard. We want to add a new forest. Of course, we chose Contoso.com. Everybody asked me, why do we use Contoso.com? At all my events, I get that at least once every event. And the reason is, we actually legally own that name, so we can actually use it in our demos. So we don't get sued for using somebody else's domain name, and we want to make sure everything's on the up and up. So that's where Contoso.com comes from. Hit next. That's what we're going to use in this particular lab. DNS, we're going to leave all these checked. We do want to make sure the password and confirm password are the same for the Active Directory services restore mode, and then go next. Delegation, we don't have to worry with this. You're going to have a warning here. That's normal. Just click next, and then it's going to populate that NetBIOS domain name. Hit next after it populates. Now, this is green. You're going to want to change everything to F drive. That's why we're going to use that new drive we've added, that new disk drive. So change that from the C drive to the F drive, and then hit next. You want to put F for each one of these entries, okay? And then once you're done, you click finish. When it's complete, you hit install, and you'll see that it's passing the prereqs and going through and doing its thing. And once it's finished, you'll actually see the server will do a reboot. When you want to get back in, I want to highlight this. You need to make sure you join as Contoso slash whatever your username was, because it's now converted to a domain controller, and there's no such thing as that local user account, right? That's what happens when you do promotion of a server to a domain controller. Now, the first thing I like to do is get rid of all those nasty pop-ups that happen in Internet Explorer when we're trying to go out and do some downloads, because what we're going to do next is download an image of 2012 in VHD form. So for this particular area, I'm just going to turn off the IE enhanced security configuration piece for administrators only. I'm just going to turn that off and click OK. That's in Server Manager. Click on Local Server. You should see IE Enhanced Security Configuration on the right. Click on the little blue on area, and it will let you turn it off there. Notice there's lots of great features here that you can turn on and off directly from this particular summary page. You can go into the network and configure things if you are using a Local Server 2012 edition. However, in Azure, that network piece is really a hands-off area. All right. Notice it says that if you join a work group, or if you're in a work group, it'll say work group. If you're in a domain, it'll change and say you're in a domain. Okay, so we're going to go next, and we're going to go out to aka.ms/ws2012tpalg. That's a direct link to the evaluation VHD of 2012 server. I use that because it's real simple. We're actually downloading this inside that Azure virtual machine using the bandwidth in Azure, instead of having to download everything to your local machine first and then manipulate it and then upload it, which takes a lot of time. We can actually do this all in one machine. Now, it may seem like, well, it's kind of weird to do that when the disk images are already in Azure. But the reason we're doing it in this guide is to help people understand the process. So once you've seen this work one time, yes, you can install those Azure command line tools on your machine, and then you're able to upload your own images of 2008 or 2012 or any of those Linux machines that we support up into your Azure storage account. So go ahead and hit download the evaluation VHD, get started, and it's going to ask you to log in with your Microsoft ID. Make sure your zip code and those type of things are in there, and click continue, and then you should see downloader get ready. You have to click on download the installer. Takes just a second or two. Let that thing get installed, and then what you should see is the downloading, or you have to agree to it and let it install. Where do you want to download to? I just choose documents in this particular example. And then you should see on the top right side of that Internet Explorer page, you should see the download progress. Shouldn't take more than a few minutes to get that downloaded. And then once it's there, you want to extract it. So it's going to be an executable that extracts into the expanded VHD folder. All right, so make sure that that goes through and starts extracting now. What we're going to do at this point is jump out back into the Azure portal, and we're going to do this from, there's a link here, we're going to do this inside that Active Directory machine. We want to install the command line tools for Azure inside that Active Directory server. Okay, not something you would do in production. Again, just a shortcut for learning the process. So we're going to go out, grab Windows Azure PowerShell, if you're running a Windows client, and then for this case, we definitely are, and go ahead and click on Run and let it install. It's going to go, I would say this, make sure you right-click and run as administrator on your local machine. We know it's going to do that on the Active Directory host or VM that we've created, but when you're at home or when you're at your office doing this, please right-click and run as administrator for the installer for the PowerShell tools. It's going to do a web platform installer launch. Click install. You'll see a list of things. Leave it at defaults and click I accept. Okay, so now the installer runs. You'll see it complete. And then we want to go into next steps. Go to the start screen while you're in Active Directory, on the Active Directory VM. If you have it fully expanded, which I would make sure your RDP session is fully expanded, take up the whole screen. That way, when you hit the Windows button, it will take you directly to the start screen. Type in Azure, A-Z-U-R-E, and you should see that newly installed Windows Azure PowerShell. You're able to launch that there. Once the prompt display is on, once you see it on the screen, you can type in ISC and press Enter, and that will let you go into the ISC version of PowerShell. if you were to run, I use this, but once you're in, the first thing, of course, set execution policy remote signed, get the Azure Published Settings file. Git-Azure Published Settings file actually will reach out and launch a web page to grab your published settings file from your subscription. If you have multiple subscriptions tied to one Microsoft ID, it's important that you then tell Azure, the command line tools, which one is your default subscription. Okay, you can also make sure that you import the PowerShell tools, the Azure PowerShell tools, into your normal Windows PowerShell prompt. So if you want to do that, the import module command is there, and this is the exact command you would type in. That will import those tools directly, so when you're in the regular PowerShell prompt, you can use or issue the Azure commands, and that's there for you to use. Okay, so we downloaded that published settings file, but now what we need to do is import it. All right, so the first thing we're going to do is import -Azure published settings file, and then the path to that particular published settings file. Once you've done it, it should go through, and it actually is just a real quick blip and says, okay, I'm done. And then you're able to issue commands. All right, right now what we first need to do is make sure we go out and copy where our particular blob storage is. What is that endpoint for our storage account? We're actually going to be uploading that image directly into our storage account, something that people need to take note of here. You've got blobs, tables, and queues. If you want to learn more about those, come out to one of our live events and we'll talk through the differences there. But for today, we want that top one, the blob store link. Okay.
Excellent. So now we've got the blob store URL. What we want to do is issue the command. So this is back at the Azure PowerShell window. And what we want to do is say add -azure-vhd --destination. Put in the URL that you just copied, --local file path, and the path to the file. I had renamed mine server2012eval.vhd, so you'll want to use the same file name you chose. Once you hit enter, you should see the MD5 hash calculation start, and then the file will start uploading to your storage account. Next, what we need to do is register the VHD. So this is something that we've added that we need to do. This is a disk we've added into our storage account. However, Azure doesn't recognize it as an OS disk or a data disk. We have to say, all right, Azure, this disk is an OS disk and it is Windows or Linux. So basically we're going to say add -azure-disk --disk name, give the name. I made mine custom server 2012. Notice the little backticks in the beginning and the end of that. --media location, so there's a space there. And then space in the quotes, put in the blob URL again, /vhds/server2012eval.vhd, end quote, --label, notice the tick again, custom server 2012, that's the name I chose, that's going to be the label we put. Put the end back tick on there, and then --OS/Windows. Again, you can use Linux as well, so if you want to upload different disks, you can. Now, in this case, it's an OS disk. So, at this point, congratulations, you've just added your first virtual disk into the Windows Azure Cloud. Now, there's also the ability to add a data disk, and it's basically the same command. However, we just drop the ending. We don't need to tell it that it's an OS. We're just adding the disk name. So the command is very similar, right? Excellent. So we hope you enjoyed today's webinar. Now, if you need to contact me again, here's my contact info, virtuallycloud9.com. That's my blog. You'll be able to find this video and other great lab guides that we've had and used in our pro camps. There's my Twitter handle as well. Also, notice the TPO hours. If you need to sign up for some office hours to talk through a lab or something that you're working on, feel free to do so. And always look at TP Meetup. That's my link there, aka.ms/TP Meetup. That's going to show when our next events are and what's coming around in the Southeast. So we hope you enjoy the webinar. Thanks, folks.